Ooh, see, I'm the ghost of Christmases right now.
Ghost of Christmases that might happen or might not, depending on the vibe.
In different Christmases.
The ghost of Christmas in your dreams.
Pacifist Christmas.
Pacifist Christmas.
Yep, that's my job, is to make sure that nobody's fighting.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to a Christmas episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Ho, is indeed. I am your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie, and I was able to evade Santa's short person call, baby.
Another year off his list.
Another year off. Indeed.
All them, 4'8" motherfuckers, they got called up, but they never made it up to me.
Mm-mm. I was too tall.
Yes, today we're looking at the 2010 Christmas special.
The Santa Draft. That's what I was thinking of calling it.
Today we're looking at the 2010 Christmas special called A Christmas Carol. Because this episode is very heavily inspired by Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol.
Okay.
I think is my favorite of the Christmas specials. I think you're really going to like it. But
how
I think
many Muppets are in it?
Not enough.
Well, then I'm not going to like it.
It isn't my favorite Christmas Carol adaptation, but I think it's my favorite Doctor Who Christmas special. What might you be expecting from a Doctor Who adaptation of A Christmas Carol, especially because we've already had one with Charles Dickens and ghosts? So this has to be different in some way.
I get the feeling that the Doctor will himself be the personification of the past, present, and the future.
So you think he's the ghost?
I believe so, because he can fucking go to the past, present, and future.
You're not wrong. That's not a wrong thought. I don't want to spoil it too much. I will tell you that
I'm correct. Thanks.
You're partly correct. He's not future. He is past, but he's not present or future. Huh. You'll see what happens in this for sure. Huh. I'm excited for you to see it because this episode, the featured actor is Michael Gambon, who you mostly know for playing Professor Dumbledore from movies 3 through 7, part 2 of Harry Potter.
Okay, cool.
And it's a very different role for him.
Him just got no beard.
Yeah, he's got no beard. And obviously he's playing a more Scrooge-like character. So he's just a very different temperament altogether. And it's
a different temperament, you say. So he's not going to be yelling at a little boy about how he put his name in the Goblet of Fire?
Harry, did you put your name in the Stocking of Fire?
Jeez, as he's pushing Harry up against his fucking glass menagerie.
Harry, did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire?
That's how he says it in the book. He's way more gentle. But in the movie, he accosts Harry.
He just tosses him all about hither and thither.
Yes, it's frightening.
Well, let's maybe do some proper predictions for this Christmas special and think about what the Cassie Profassi might be for this Christmas Profismus.
Just stop. Just, it's not going to work. Move on.
All right. All right. So
it's Merry Christmas also.
Sorry, Merry Christmas. In what Christmassy way does the Doctor enter this story?
Oh, through a chimney.
He jumps down a chimney?
I believe so.
All right. So,
it wouldn't be the first time that the Doctor has entered a scene through a chimney.
So here's the thing. I did have some multiple choice options, but one of them is down a chimney. So I will accept that answer from you.
Okay. Awesome. What were the other options?
There was also aboard a sleigh or popped out of a giant Christmas cracker.
Oh, like the ones that you pull apart and
get the paper crown
out.
Yeah,
no, he's coming down a chimney for sure.
And then another one, just to keep it simple, because I want the episode itself to just be good for you. I'll say this takes place on an alien planet where an otherwise normal kind of animal flies. Is it fish, spiders, or, appropriate to us watching Wicked earlier, monkeys?
Fish.
Flying fish.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't have any other context. This is a...
This is just a shot in the dark.
Because there is a part of me that's like, spiders could be interesting because we've had another Christmas episode with spiders.
That is true.
So that could be a cute little callback. Mm-hmm. But if this is a planet, flying fish makes just a hair more sense than flying monkeys.
All right.
Just because that is caused by eldritch magic.
All right. Well, let's find out together if the doctor comes down the chimney and if the planet is full of flying fish as we watch Doctor Who's A Christmas Carol. Have you been a bad kid this year? Did you stick gum under the table? Tell your teacher a dog ate your homework? Or maybe, you monster, you even peeked at your Christmas presents early? Well, friend, we've got some bad news for you. Santa knows.
Dun, dun, dun!
And when Santa knows, ooh, Santa comes. Ooh. Forget coal in your stocking. Yuck. This jolly old elf has been training.
Training.
Squats with sacks of toys. Chimney sprints. Yeah. CrossFit.
Yeah.
He's faster, stronger, and angrier than ever. And you? You're on his list. His naughty list.
Naughty.
But don't panic yet, kid. There's still hope. Call now for the Bad Kid Protection Program. That's right. The Bad Kid Protection Program specializes in keeping naughty kids like you safe from Santa's bowl full of pain jelly.
Ouch, ouch.
Our highly trained team of elves will whisk you away to a secure location. Codename the Ho 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 No Go Snow Globe Zone.
Say that 3 times fast.
Where Santa can't find you. Act now, and we'll even throw in a fake good kid certificate. So just in case he does find you, you've got your paperwork in order. Santa may see you when you're sleeping, but with the Bad Kid Protection Program, we'll make sure he don't know shit. Call 1-800-BAD-KIDS today. That's right, 1-800-BAD-KIDS. Don't be the victim of a fight before Christmas.
Merry Christmas, motherfuckers.
What? And we are back from A Christmas Carol.
Yeah. That sums it up, I think.
Yeah, God, this one makes me emotional.
Why is that? What do you think?
There's a lot in it that appeals to me very specifically. The specifics of someone changing for the better to such a drastic degree in such a short amount of time really gets me. Matt Smith really fucking sells it. This whole, like, start, like, he is on the top of his game as far as playing the Doctor this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Gambon really does his job too. Like, he sells both sides of Kazran as well
and Kazran's father,
as well as Elliot Kazran, Elliot Sardik. And then, of course, I'm blanking on her name right this minute. I'll look
Abigail.
It up.
Abigail.
I was trying to think of the name of Abigail's actress. I believe it's Catherine something.
Abigail.
She is a Welsh operatic singer.
I mean, that explains it.
And yeah, and just so you know, that actress, that is her actual singing voice.
Oh, I should fucking hope so. Yeah,
they didn't hire some singer to be dubbed over
No,
her.
They hired a singer for this.
Yeah, this is actually her first acting role.
Oh, man.
And she kills it.
I felt bad because I made a little joke at the very beginning of my notes, but now I feel bad about it.
What was your note?
I just asked why Dumbledore had Nora Freeze up in his house. Now I understand why.
Yep.
I mean, I feel like Nora Freeze's and Abigail's stories are similar. They're both sick.
Yeah. Her name was Catherine Jenkins.
Catherine Jenkins.
Yeah. But I just, there's something.
An actual ice siren.
Right. She.
Holy moly.
Right. Like, there was a reason why I was like, Cassie's really going to like this one. Because
it's not unique to me. Uh-huh. There is something, though, about people who are just genuinely very beautiful singers. You saw me the other night. I found a rendition of I'm Crying Thinking About It. It's Christian Chenoweth singing
It's one of those. It's one of the old timey like jazz songs I love.
But just like Christian Chenoweth is one of those voices that just, like I said, a dagger through the heart.
Right.
It just like, ugh.
I mean, I'm thinking just when we saw Wicked, I heard you crying at The Wizard and I with Cynthia Erivo performing her version of it. So.
That's different, though. That song meant a lot to me when I was a child.
That's fair.
And that was one of my favorite songs. I sang it for like every audition, despite every fucking musical director being like, hey, nobody sing anything from Wicked. And I went, this is one of the rare songs that like is so perfectly suited for my mostly alto voice now. I'm just crying thinking about it. Oh, man. But there's something. I think it's, if we want to go a little bit more woo-woo, that is one of those things where, like, I firmly believe that everybody has, like, their specific talents. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, singers, particularly, like, very gifted singers, are so important for the emotional ecosystem of the human race.
Yeah. And I will also say that I think that of Stephen Moffat's scripts, this is one of the most well thought out.
This is the one where I went, the silly willy timey wimey bullshit, I'm eating it up right now. I love all of what's happening. It's well done and yeah. It's not convoluted and it's a Christmas carol. We all know a Christmas carol. Yeah. We know what to expect.
But it's not just them doing a flat retelling. They tell it in a way that only Doctor Who can do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's.
This in compare, and I don't want it to sound like I'm shitting on the two-parter that we just watched.
Uh-huh.
There was a lot of stuff in there where I went, this is making me angry. There was nothing in this that made me explicitly angry.
Yeah.
Except for like maybe how things looked, but that's because it's CG on a TV budget.
Yeah. Or even then, like most of it takes place in Kazran's house, and Kazran is a sad man.
Yeah.
So it's just not a very like electrically lit up space. But that's also supposed
well,
to
no,
just
I specifically
it.
Meant like the ship and the shark.
Oh, yeah, it's fair.
It's like I don't love how these look, but whatever.
Like those are so like those don't matter.
No,
like
that's why I'm saying it's I would rather them have given the money to the talent as opposed to
yeah.
making the making things that weren't going to look good in the first place look better. No, give all of the money to Christine.
Catherine.
Give all of the money to Catherine.
Yeah, and I don't even want to say it's just the telling of A Christmas Carol that's interesting. It's like there are some moments that are just really clever independently. Like when the doctor and Amy are on the phone together, like trying to say like, okay, I figured out something. I just don't know how I'm going to like solve this problem yet. And then the music starts playing on the speakers and he's like, it's a Christmas carol. It's a Christmas carol. And then you see the moment of him like a Christmas carol.
Yeah.
Like that's a really like that's a very clever way of doing it. That relies mostly on the actor really selling you on what the plan is. There's other just like little touches like that I feel like maybe because they're having to write 13 scripts they just can't always do, as opposed to when they get to these Christmas specials and they can just focus on a script. But that one little touch where the doctor says like, I wear the bow tie and I don't care. That's what makes it cool. And then it cuts back to adult Kazran and now he's wearing a bow tie himself. Like, that's such a good idea that also reflects some real world stuff, like with your friend that was wearing bow ties because bow ties were cool.
Yeah.
Like that. I mean, there really is a like the doctor makes you want to be like him.
Well, I mean, that kind of filters into anything. It's the things themselves are not inherently cool. It's the confidence attached to
it. Yeah, exactly. And
like me with my cool pink glasses so I can see and not get a migraine. I specifically liked when they were trying to get into the ice box.
Yeah.
And the kid Kazran doesn't know the code and adult Kazran is screaming it at the screen. And then you just see the doctor pop his head out and say, thank you. That's what I was looking for. And then pop back in.
Cheeky little bastard.
I was like, this, I like that. I'll allow it.
Or the like, I'll be back. I'll be way, way back. And then you hear the TARDIS disappear, but then reappear in the footage Kazran is watching.
Mm-hmm.
And he just like jumps in through the window.
I do like that the Doctor was going to be like, well, I'm going to leave now. And then Kid Kazran goes, yeah, we'll be back next year, Christmas Eve.
He says he'll be back every Christmas. And there's like, what? No, I didn't say that.
I will say this is the first time the Doctor, very good on his timing.
Yeah.
As far as we know, because it truly could be that the older Kazran got, like, it wasn't a consecutive, oh, we can very clearly see that this is exactly 7 years or 6 years. It's... There is something to be said there, but I was like, hey, the Doctor's being aware of his timing. That's or, new for him.
Matt Smith's Doctor does generally seem to be.
You can't say that. You saw the first episode of his arc, his whole series.
In fairness.
7 years.
Yeah. I said generally speak. I mean, and maybe that's why. Maybe that's why he's better on his timing, is that he feels bad about Amy. So he's been really, really precise now.
Perhaps. I do like that he specifically goes out of his way to mildly traumatize Kit Kazran by telling him about face spiders.
Yeah.
There's a thing called a face spider. It's just like a tiny baby's head with spider legs. And it's specifically evolved to scuttle up the backs of bedroom cupboards.
This one's safe, though. I went, that's the scariest thing I've ever heard. Hey, Zach, I have a new idea for a tattoo. I'll put it on the back of my back.
So it's crawling up your bedroom cupboard.
Yeah.
That's what I call your spine.
Okay, I was going to say, is that my shoulder or my butt?
And I like that a lot of the story can be told in just like little snippets, like the arc of like the Doctor coming back for Kazran every year is mostly told through the pictures that old Kazran is looking at as he's going through his memories.
Well, and this episode does a very good job at having things that repeat.
Yeah.
So specifically, the phrase "we're halfway through the dark,"
mm-hmm.
the like going back to reference the fact that Kazran did not slap the little boy because, you know, his father did that, and then the choice to make Michael play his own father. I love when things do, because that's like a theater trope.
Yeah, and Michael Gambon also does it in a really good way, where you could still tell it's him, but he's holding up his shoulders tighter against his body. He's hunched over a little. He's got different facial hair. His hair isn't all white. There's like still black in his hair, even when he's
but
Elliot.
It really drills in the, you know, this is a child that doesn't want to become like his father.
Yeah.
Yet in the bigger meta context verse,
mm-hmm.
he is playing his father. Good soup.
Yeah, I really like a lot of Michael Gambon's choice, like a lot of the way Michael Gambon plays this, because he does play because we both know him. I think most people I think would know him as Dumbledore from the later Harry Potter movies.
Yeah,
this is one where he really gets to show a lot of his range as an actor.
Well, yeah, because this is another moment where an actor gets to be very emotional.
Yeah.
Very emotionally driven, very torn up.
Yeah. And it's not just the emotional drive. It's the ebb and flow the character makes. Mm-hmm. Like that he'll improve as a person, but then as time goes on and he learns the truth about Abigail, he dips back down again. And so he's playing this like this back and forth that he's got for this character, but he knows how to play it in a way where where the first time he changes, he's not all the way there. And when he recedes back, he's not receding all the way back.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very like it's something that's really hard to define in real terms. But Michael Gambon is pulling it off.
Oh, it's two steps forward, one step back.
Exactly.
It is literally that.
Yeah. But he's very good at playing that in a way that doesn't rely on it being expressly told. You can just feel it in the way Michael Gambon is speaking. One thing that I really enjoy about this episode is that it feels so, in the same way that like Blink is, you really don't need to know a lot about Doctor Who.
No.
Like, and Rory are just, like, part of the plot device to get the story going.
Dressed in their appropriate attire, quote, just a bit of fun.
Yeah, they're Amy in her kissogram outfit and Rory as his Roman soldier.
It's so funny.
While they're in the honeymoon suite.
It's so funny.
Right?
Which, you know, means that they both went like, I'm having you dress up as this thing for me.
They're both into authority figures.
Yeah, they both like police.
They're both into men in uniform. Just one of them has to also be a woman.
And one also has to be covered in bronze. I don't want to say like I'm glad at the amount that Rory and Amy weren't in this, but I was like, I'm not missing them a whole lot.
Well, that's the thing, is it's the same way that like in Blink, you don't really miss the Doctor. Like, you can't not have the Doctor in Doctor Who, but the fact that he's not there just serves to show that the story is good enough without them.
I liked her coming in as the Ghost of Christmas right now as a literal hologram.
Yeah, the Ghost of Christmas present as a hologram, showing off all the people on the ship singing Silent Night because they're trying to resonate with the ice crystals so they don't die.
Yeah,
because
they don't have the power of the shark siren.
Yeah, they're not all Welsh opera singers. If only they were. If only one of these 4,000 people could sing opera.
It was the way that when Abigail's number decreases the first time, it just really sets the precedence of bummers yet to come.
I feel like you had a very similar reaction to the way I first reacted when the Doctor says, when he goes, okay, fine, show me the future. And the Doctor goes, I'm showing you now. And then looks over his shoulder. So what do you think?
Well, even before that, though, it was the last Christmas Eve that they spent together and they went to go spend it with her sister.
Uh-huh.
And the sister was very visibly angry that she had never come to visit before.
Uh-huh.
And then moved their holiday plans around to accommodate her sister.
Uh-huh.
Unrealistic. I have never met a sister that would have been like, here, let me uproot my whole plan and my whole deal to accommodate you. There's also a part
that's like, I don't know how you do that because a turkey takes all day.
Yeah.
That's not we can whip that up in an hour kind of thing.
Well, they're poor. They're not eating turkey. They're eating rotisserie chicken.
They just whip.
The poor can't afford turkey. Only roasted goose or rotisserie chicken from Costco. The Doctor being Ghost of Christmas past and future, in a sense, love that. But it was the, like, specifically then.
It's Kazran being his own Ghost of Christmas future.
Yeah. It was the reveal of, oh, I already am.
Yeah, I watched, I sat here and I heard you go, oh my God.
Well, because I was thinking more and more, because Kazran said it a couple times of how do you choose?
Uh-huh.
How do you choose, or in the case of Abigail, how do you choose what her last day is going to be?
Mm-hmm.
And just having that thought of like, yeah, like how do you choose? If you have that power, how do you choose? Very similar to, like, without diving into too much self-exposition stuff.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of things that are in my life currently changing while I am standing perfectly still.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I'm going through a thing where I have to decide when I am going to do things that might possibly be the last time I do those. Because one of the things that made me so angry when I was a kid is that I had no memory of the last time my mom picked me up and carried me into my bedroom.
Oh.
Yeah, it's shit like that that you don't realize is the last time that something like that is going to happen until it's happened and you're so far removed from it.
Mm-hmm.
That concept of how do you choose really hit me. And so I was resonating and ruminating on that. But then the reveal that Kid Kazran's been in the room the whole time.
Right. And it's so well played, too, where it really is just, You know it before it happened, before you
it's
see it.
It's a 1-2 punch, because I was hung up on the thought of like, yeah, adult Kazran has a point. Like, but at this point, like, he's an old man. Like, he's, you know, he's gone through the motions. He has already mourned the loss of Abigail, with still having the potential and the promise that she can come back and spend at least one more day with him. And it's that, like, oh geez, that really sucks. Oh man, oh no. They're doing the Ghost of Christmas Present or Future thing. Oh God, they're already doing it.
Yeah, and it's also I don't even know if you caught it, but there's a really clever thing that they do where Kazran basically just refuses Scrooge's Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come.
And now you need to see the future.
Fine, do it, show me. I'll die cold, alone, and afraid. Of course I will, we all do. What difference does showing me make?
Well, like, and his whole mentality is the, like, everyone dies. How is today any different than another day?
Yeah. So there's a part of it where I really respect that they made that call, because it feels very appropriate to Kazran.
Particularly, that's the kind of call that you can only make with a time traveling wizard.
Well, especially because Kazran feels like a smart enough guy that he would get what's going on maybe he thought it was just a bit when Matt Smith said, I'm the Ghost of Christmas Past, and then went into his past. Like, there's a part of him where, like, that he was too distracted by the shifting memories to put that together. But as soon as Amy says, I'm the Ghost of Christmas Right Now, that he starts going, okay, I see what we're doing now. I'm Scrooge. Ha ha. And so his natural defenses would be to say, I'm not Scrooge. You can't change me in the same way that you would have changed him. And so I do like that instead they find a whole other angle for it, which is to make him his own Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, which I think it's brilliant.
Oh, because it's also, you see it a couple times, his sensitivity towards young children. I don't want to say young boys, because now that sounds like creepy, but just that.
To crying children, specifically.
Well, it's the sensitivity towards, like, your literal inner child.
Mm-hmm.
He chooses not to slap the little boy in the very beginning, as he shouldn't.
That's what his dad
child would
do. It's not what he would do.
Well, yeah, but even it comes up again and again, because we do see his dad slapping him as he's younger. And mm-hmm. we do see then old man Kazran and then child Kazran have this moment where he is still emulating his father, even though he's electing not to slap himself. There's just this, like, it's that desire to protect your own inner child and your inner self, but that's only in a figurative sense.
Yeah.
And only in a show like this could we actually see the literal of that.
I mean, in this one, we also, in that moment specifically where Kazran almost runs up to, like, smack his younger self, there is a part of it where we've seen Kazran's memories change in real time. Like, as the doctor's about to go out into the closet, or out of the closet to look at the fish, Kazran's like, no, you can't go out there. So his mind has already caught up to what hasn't even happened to the doctor yet. So I wonder if in that moment, as he approaches his younger self with a backhand prepared, Kazran is feeling both of these moments at the same time.
I wonder if that you could consider being one of those, like, moments in time that are in flux.
Yeah, I mean, his whole life was clearly in flux from the looks of it.
Yeah.
The doctor went, I can change everything about you, Kazran.
Well, he does and he doesn't, because the older he gets, he is upset and he's pissed off at the doctor then. And he does regress a considerable amount.
Yeah. And
you need that third and final blow to set things in motion.
Yeah, it's.
Because even the things then are like, he does such a good job that the fucking cloud machine doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, because his brainwaves are too different.
Because his father never anticipated him completely changing for the good.
Yeah, his doctor, not only the doctor specifically says his father never would have programmed it for the man he is now, which is just another callback to, like, Kazran isn't his father. You'd said it earlier, the idea that they keep repeating the phrase halfway out of the dark, because I do really like that as a way of perceiving someone like Kazran, who mm-hmm. who clearly has not been given that many opportunities in his life to be a good person. And so the doctor's whole ethos in this episode is basically what all he needs is someone to push him in the right direction.
Which is also kind of a wonderful lesson for everybody.
Yes.
Because like there are some people in this world, in our country, in our home state, in our mm-hmm. hometown, you know, there are people everywhere you go that are so deep rooted and set in their ways that you look at them and you go, yeah, you're a lost cause. But this is just a wonderful, gentle reminder that nobody is a lost cause. Mm-hmm. You're just halfway through the dark.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if Elliot Sardak was halfway through. It seems like he might have just been the dark.
I mean, he also didn't have anybody to take him back in time. And
that, you know, fair enough.
Look at his childhood. And
the doctor just has to keep going back in time through this family's history to try and make like his great, great grandfather a better person.
Yeah.
I was going to say something and I lost it.
It's OK. I'm thinking more about Catherine Jenkins.
Speaking of Catherine, there was a sort of cute moment that I can never decide if I like it or not, where every time they open the door for Christmas Eve, Abigail goes, "Doctor, doctor." And then as soon as Kazran's like an adult, instead of saying hi to the doctor, she looks at him and goes, "Kazran." And there's a part of it that's like, Catherine, he was like 12 6 days ago for you.
Yes. I do also, though, wonder how much in her like frozen stasis she's how much brain activity she has.
Yeah, that's fair.
Where it's very possible that for any of the times after when she goes back into this stasis, mm-hmm. she's just thinking about the doctor and, you know, this small child.
She's just dreaming for
because
a long
it could
time.
Very well be just like, oh, Kazra, fuck. Surprise.
In that little montage, you clocked something that made you pretty happy, though, that one Christmas where both the doctor and young Kazran are wearing long doofy scarves.
Yep.
I do kind of wish it had like the doctor's had been Tom Baker's scarf. It was, you know, fashioned after that, but it was a regular size scarf.
I disagree. I think it would have been wonderful if they were sharing a scarf. One extra long doofy scarf. I also am really loving the canonical event of the doctor marrying Marilyn Monroe.
Yep. Well, maybe it wasn't a real chapel.
Well, I just really like now having Marilyn, get your coat.
Marilyn, get your coat.
I like the idea that he basically didn't think about hiding or even killing time. He just went, I gotta get back to my friends. Oh, they're making out. Well, guess I'm getting married.
It's just of all people, I'm like, I do love the idea of the doctor settling down in this for but a brief moment with Marilyn Monroe.
Do you think that once a year he gets a call that's just "Happy birthday, Mr. Doctor"?
You don't do it right.
You want to do it for me?
Happy birthday, Mr. Doctor.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, you have to pay for the rest of that.
To you.
Mr. President.
I do really like that just in the pantheon of Marilyn Monroe's partner, she's got Marlon Brando, the Kennedys, and the Doctor.
And Matt Smith as the Doctor.
I don't know. I feel like she probably still would have been in a Capaldi. I feel like if Capaldi showed up at her door.
Absolutely.
She'd be like, oh, the accent's doing it for me.
Marilyn was just a normal woman.
she's just a normal woman.
She's just a normal woman. She's just a regular woman.
She's just an innocent woman.
She is.
You were talking earlier about how it was like the acts of kindness that really were meant to shape Kazran. I like that the doctor managed to, like, even the non-main characters, he managed to do kindnesses for, like both I think it was Mrs. Avenatti, might have been her last name.
Oh, it was the way that everybody suddenly won the lottery around the doctor.
Yeah, when there was no lottery.
There is no lottery.
You'll never guess, clever old Mrs. Mantis. She only went and won the lottery.
There isn't any lottery.
There isn't any lottery.
I know. What a woman.
Just doesn't feel the need to explain it any more than that. I like to imagine there actually wasn't a lottery. The doctor just went, hey, if you can give me like an hour and a half, I could promise that when you come back to work tomorrow, your boss will suck less. And they're like, all right, bet. I'm going to go get
that's
a slushie.
That's them winning the lottery, literally, is having a boss. Like, genuinely working at a place where my bosses like me and I feel appreciated, that's winning the lottery, baby. One other thing, he did mention it, and I counter-argue. I'm going to try to unpack this and turn it into a whole thing. When the doctor says,
what's so special about you?
Have you ever seen Mary Poppins?
No.
Good, because that comparison would have been rubbish.
No, doctor. You are Mary Poppins. You just have a magic wand.
It's instead of a bag that's bigger on the inside, you have a box that's bigger on the inside.
Exactly. They're both fey beings.
I stand
by this, even down to the whimsical flying fish.
Yeah, there's a few different characters that have been called
Time Lords.
Time Lords. Mary Poppins is one. Miss Frizzle is one.
Yeah, because they absolutely are.
Yeah, there's these characters that have things that are bigger on the inside and are very eccentric.
Yeah. Mary Poppins absolutely is a Time Lord.
Willy Wonka is another popular one that comes up.
I love that. I think Gene Wilder is a Time Lord, period. Fuck, I would have loved to see him play the Doctor.
Right.
There is no hope for us to get a Gene Wilder doctor, but there is still hope for us to get a Jeremy Allen White doctor, which is
visually very similar.
Almost the same thing.
It would look like if Gene Wilder became the doctor, but also was really buff.
We have yet to see a buff doctor. Like stringy, yes. Fast, absolutely. Well, I guess Eccleston was pretty buff.
Eccleston was a fit guy. I think that if you're looking for a traditionally fit doctor, Nchuti Gatwa.
I was going to say Nchuti is.
Because that man is caked up.
Yeah. I'm excited for whenever we get to him.
Yeah, I think you'll enjoy his interpretation, too. But we'll come to him soon enough.
Eventually.
Eventually. There were also just a lot of really good little moments in this episode. I shouldn't even say the little moments. There was good pacing for a lot of moments. Like when Matt Smith first dives in through the chimney, that whole scene with him just like at a 10 for manic energy, where he's like walking around like, here's a picture of Father Christmas. Me hanging out with him and Frank Sinatra. See that? We're also with Albert Einstein. I'm going to put this back in my pocket. Hey, who's that girl in the icebox? That he walks over to the machine and he's like, ooh, I love machines with big buttons. Got my name all over it. Well, it will. Give me an hour and a crayon.
I miss that.
It's just like that.
I think that's when I was writing down my Nora Freeze joke.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, the give me an hour and a crayon. The crayon is really what makes that line
work. An hour and a crayon to just put his name all over something.
Yeah, because he's got to put brilliant. He can't just like sign it once. He's got to sign it a bunch of times for it to be all over.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. It makes sense. I just am bummed I missed it the first time.
There was one line I really enjoyed where it's like, see, I'm your babysitter. And if you look here, you'll see that I'm known far and wide as a mature, responsible adult. And he holds up his piece of psychic paper and Kid Kazrak goes, that's just a bunch of wavy lines. And he goes, yeah, shorted out. Finally, a lie too big.
This is being a babysitter. And a mature adult.
Yeah, a mature adult is the lie that's too big.
I feel like psychic paper was like, okay, yeah, we got this. We don't got this. I don't have it.
If you had said mature, I could have had that, but then you said responsible. If you had
kept it on babysitter.
Yeah, that was a moment I really enjoyed. I like him and Kid Kazran hiding in the closet with the little string between them. That feels very like I'm a kid.
I specifically like the angle from... the angle of the laptop still recording. And it's like clearly on a shoe or something because it's all
like tilted.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. Just this little string thing just feels very much like a game you would play with your siblings when you're very young.
Yeah.
Well, yes. They're
fishing for sky fish.
They're going sky fishing.
That's whimsical as fuck, Zach.
Yeah. I that was one thing I was looking for because the little fishies that are like swimming around the streetlights.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
They're so cute. But then they bring in a giant ass shark. Hello, name's Bruce. Hung.
That really changes the vibe of Christmas when it's about Jingle Jaws.
Which that was another one of my favorite lines that they had in there, where the sonic screwdriver is stuck in the shark's stomach, and he's like, "I think the shark's mouth is stuck open, but just in case, be careful because I've only got two goes of this, and then it's your turn." He's like, "What do you mean two goes?" And he goes, "Two arms," rolling up his sleeves. Can you imagine if just like for the back half of that episode, Matt Smith just has one arm?
I was going to say for the back half of that episode, it's just Matt Smith's legs sticking out of a shark's mouth.
He's just wearing the shark like a suit.
He's just running around with the shark actively still trying to eat him.
That is, speaking of the shark, that is the only like minor hang up I have with this episode. And that is that I don't think sharks live long enough for that shark to still be alive by the end of the story.
You are incorrect.
Am I incorrect?
Friend. Yes.
How long do sharks live for?
Very long time. I want to say it depends on the shark. That one to me looked like a nurse shark. Not a nurse shirt spelled S-H-U-R-T. And so nurse sharks can live up to 24 years.
Yeah, but I still feel like that because one, that shark was clearly fully grown.
Yeah, even still 24. Yeah, sharks can live anywhere between 20 and 30 years.
Yeah, but that we're talking like from when young Kazran was there, he was 12. And Michael Gambon, I think, was in his 60s. So we're talking like a 50 year gap. Now, the exception here is, though, it's a space shark.
Yeah.
So who knows how long those things live? That's why I said it's such a minor baby hang up.
Well, because that's the average is 20 to 30 years. The spiny dogfish has one of the longest lifespans at more than 100 years. Whale sharks may also live over 100 years.
OK, so
yeah, orcas are 50 to 90 years.
OK, so there's at least
since we are dealing with not actual undersea shark.
Yeah.
Since there are no ice sharks that we can look to for reference.
There are no sharks that swim in the fog.
We can just...
That we know of.
Yeah. That we, fuck. I think that it's safe to say that there is a non-zero chance that you could have a shark that lives to be 100 years old.
Yeah, it's not, I don't think it's unreasonable. So it's always just I've always just
in the sky and there are no other natural predators other than airships.
If one of the like a sky Steven Spielberg shows up to make a movie about
him. Thank you. Yes.
This is my favorite of the Doctor Who Christmas specials.
And it's clear why this is very good.
Yeah, I do. I think this is one of Moffat's best scripts he's ever written for the show. I think it's really tight. It's really creative. A lot of the lines are really good. There are moments that work on every level. I don't really revisit many of the Doctor Who Christmas specials. This is the only one that I think I put on.
Well, yeah, because it doesn't make you angry. Because, you know, David Tennant's not being woken up by hot tea. It's my favorite part about this episode. No tea. Not a drop.
I don't think you get a moment of Kazran drinking tea.
You don't get a Kazran doing anything. Yeah. You just see him be grumpy.
Yeah, just. So if you are one of those people who are, you know, watch or who listen to this and don't necessarily watch the episodes with us, I really, really recommend going to check this one out. Even if you're not watching the show, this is, I think, a really good Christmas carol, a really good Christmas story.
It feels like one of the ones that I truthfully might add into my Rolodex of Christmas things to watch, because I do love a good Christmas movie. Mm-hmm. I think that Christmas specials mm-hmm. are my favorite.
Yeah.
There's something about taking characters that you know and love and then placing them in a holiday context that usually is a little bit silly, like the Pee Wee Playhouse Christmas special. One of my absolute favorite things to ever exist.
Yeah.
And it's just fun to see characters you know and love celebrating the holidays. This is not that, but it is still telling a story mm-hmm. that you know and love. And there are still some of those little holiday tropes.
And it's telling a story that you know and love, but it's telling it in such a unique way.
That only Doctor Who can. We've said that sentence so many times.
Well, no, I wasn't even really talking about the way Doctor Who can. I mean, but if you've already watched like a version of A Christmas Carol, the Muppet Christmas Carol, and then you put this one on, I don't think you would be upset. You're not like, I'm watching it again. Because while there are a lot of like allusions to it, it doesn't borrow it doesn't use it so wholesale that it feels like it's just doing the Christmas Carol again. There's a part of me that's like, I would love to see other TV shows try to pull off Christmas caroling somebody. Like, can you imagine for a moment if Bob's Burgers decided, like the kids all decided to pull a Christmas Carol on Mr. Fish Odor?
I would love that. Lauren Bouchard, please listen to me. I'm reaching out to Lauren through the ether, through the internet. You gotta believe me. That episode would do so great.
Well, we'll see how the next season pans out. Maybe it'll be just as great on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Ho, ho, ho is my doctor.
Ho, ho, ho is indeed.
No, it's ho, ho, who.
Ho, ho, who is indeed. Merry Christmas.
And a Cassie New Year.
Merry belated Christmas, everybody, and a happy Who Year. This has been our first full calendar year of doing this podcast, and it has been a really fun experience. We've covered a lot of ground in terms of the show, and I'm looking forward to doing even more things next year. We're doing some more classic Doctor stories, some Who-adjacent media, and we're cooking up some special episode ideas right now. In fact, our next episode will be Cassie looking at and critiquing the Doctor's various outfits throughout the years. If you've got an idea for a special episode we could do, feel free to let us know on Blue Sky Threads or Twitter at WIMDPOD. That's WIMDPOD. Be sure to subscribe if you haven't already, and share us with any fellow Whovians you think would be interested in our little show. If you're interested in supporting us more directly, you can sponsor us on Patreon at patreon.com/whoismydoctor, where you can get access to episodes of this podcast a whole week early, or get a shout-out in the outros like our current $5 patrons, Andrew Blewett and David Gansel. We're taking next week off to enjoy the holidays a bit, but we'll be back the Tuesday after, because in 2025, your Tuesdays are still Who's Days.